Associate Professor Lara Grees is from Ngāpuhi Nui Tonu. She has some Tararā connections and Ngāi Pākehā as well. And today we're talking about the first 100 days of this new coalition government, some of the moves, and many of them have come in a rush, of course, through urgency in Parliament. Thanks for joining us again on the programme. Tuhine, kia ora, rau atu koe, Lara.
Morena, yes, the first 100-day plan. It's been interesting watching, definitely. Definitely interesting from a constitutional perspective too.
Explain that, please.
Yeah, so normally what happens is, you know, you put the law that you want to pass into a bill. The bill goes to the House. They vote for it to go off to Select Committee. The Select Committee is a selection of 10-ish, around 10 different party MPs. And the public comes and makes submissions on laws. So, you know, a variety of people will make submission on laws, from experts, nerdy academics like myself, through to, you know, community groups, hapū and iwi, to, like, just concerned individuals. All sorts of people will make submissions. And in that process, you know, things can come up when you're making the law. And also opposition can come up as well. So it could be that someone opposes a law from a certain perspective, maybe from a treaty lens, maybe from that perspective, but all sorts of opposition and different things that no one's thought about come up in that lawmaking process. Then it goes back to the House, and those sometimes those amendments to the bill get voted on. Sometimes the bill doesn't get amended. There's all sorts of things along those lines, and then the law gets passed. But that process is really quite important. If you go back and look at, you know, laws in the 80s and 90s, and even when we did have first past the post, and parties didn't need to negotiate with other parties to form a coalition, we still had a lot of the time that lawmaking process. So you can go back and see what the rationale, what the reasoning was behind a law being a certain way. And that's quite important for us generally as a society, to be able to oppose and to be able to debate and to be able to figure out, yeah, what are some of the obvious holes and things. But we haven't seen this with the law recently, and with National and this government using urgency to pass kind of more bills in the last 7 weeks than what a government normally does in its term.
Well, the worst 100 days ever politically, according to some commentators. Of course, as a people, we've harked for more political reference for Ngāi Māori, but I don't think anyone expected our issues to be so front and centre, and in many ways pushing us back decades. We look towards the treaty as some protection mechanism for what we hold dear. When it's circumvented, as in the case of the fast-track legislation, and now references that there will be no more general treaty clauses in any future legislation, these are big ticket items that seem to have been pushed through and somewhat under the radar. Your thoughts there, Lara?
Well, yeah, I think that for any of that, it is actually, so even if you are pushing ahead from like a kind of quite right-wing anti-treaty perspective, I think the idea is, if you're really truly into freedom of speech and you're really truly into democracy, that you want to make sure that the issues get an airing, even if you don't listen to them in the end. That's really one of the things about democracy. And what we see around the world is that, you know, you will see populist governments from time to time, that is the kind of governments that create that us versus them division, that might be anti-democratic, but like some of them will kind of follow that what we call democratic norms, some of them won't. And I would say that this is starting to head into that kind of idea of some of those, and that's happened in some of those Western democracies, of not following democratic norms. Those kind of ideas that Pākehā especially, but the system, the, you know, New Zealand kind of political Westminster system holds dear. And so not being able to air these issues out properly and have a proper debate on them could create further division longer term, and isn't really in keeping with democracy and things like freedom of speech. So that's quite concerning, and concerning longer term. I mean, of course, what we could see is this government get voted out, or we could see the government, the next iterations of the government, be just the National Party plus a kind of weaker coalition partner. But then that, of course, would give whatever future left government a lot of stuff to work through in reverse. And in the meantime, you know, most New Zealanders think the biggest issue is the cost of living crisis. So it's not really clear how that's going to land.
Well, as the major party sold its soul for power here, I get hoha hearing from like ACT or New Zealand First that this is what New Zealand voted for. And when we look at the numbers that voted for both of those minor parties within the coalition, I don't think that anyone realised the shape of the arrangement going forward. Was there some voter naivety here, even though we've had MMP for a long time? Do you think that those who voted in the way they did realised the way that this could be arranged post-election, saying that this is what New Zealand voted for, but tends to grate when at times it feels like the tail wagging the dog?
Yeah, this has been one of the long time criticisms of MMP, that, you know, the smaller parties that get in have this kind of blackmail or coalition potential and are able to kind of walk away or make a government fall apart, or, you know, they're really the major party has to do a lot of what the minor parties want to do in order to get that coalition, get that government formation over the line. Generally, the public is not very supportive. When we look at things like the New Zealand election study, the public is not supportive of smaller parties having disproportionate or too much power. I was on part of a thing called the Independent Electoral Law Review, where we actually recommended lowering the threshold for MMP, so there would be, and one of the reasons for that is that there would be more minor parties for governments to choose to go with, and so therefore one party or two party doesn't hold all the power. In this case, when we look at what the pollsters say, and this is a pollster talking at Stephen Levine's Parliament conference, post-election parliamentary conference, was that actually a lot of the pollsters say that people voted for change. They did want change. Labor was unpopular for a two-term government, and they wanted some kind of change, but this wasn't quite the change that they were voting for. And that's where all of the pollsters are sitting, that it's a case that actually the change that people wanted was more around that economic change, you know, say National's message of getting the economy back on track versus treaty stuff, you know, that people were not really voting based on. But yes, there is a small vocal minority of people who are really anti-treaty and anti-Māori, but like that wasn't, they're never like a huge proportion of the population, and they're actually, most people just wanted some kind of economic change. However, that does now create a risk, and as we've seen in Australia with their Voice to Parliament referendum, there is a risk that that vocal minority does pull some of that majority over to their side. So that's a concern going forward, and a concern generally, yeah, something that I wouldn't want to see, but something that, yeah, is a potential risk in the future.
Tēnā koe. We've got a very youthful population, as you're aware, Lara, and we've long had a Wahine Māori co-leading the Greens. Now her co-leader ally is a young woman. I think she's not yet 30. We're talking about Chloe here. Do you think she'll have some cut through, and would you anticipate growing support for the Greens with this younger co-leader who might resonate with young Māori voters?
Well, yeah, the Greens about 2 years ago changed their leadership roles because they previously needed to have a man and a woman, but they kind of changed their rules because they figured that Te Tiriti partnership and having a Māori co-leader and a whoever else co-leader, Māori, non-Māori, whatever co-leader, was a better model for them going forward. And this has kind of opened the door for many of their sort of woman MPs, because they're a party that normally has about 70% female representation. So in this case, Chloe Forbrick's put her name forward and been successfully elected to co-leadership. She is 29, Auckland Central MP, quite different to what we've seen out of the Greens recently, although the Greens are doing really well in cities when we look at the electorates they picked up. I think potentially, you know, she's got a very good social media profile. She's got a good general kind of media profile, and that's only really going to be a position of strength for her. There wasn't necessarily anyone else who would have put themselves forward or kind of been ready in their careers. Chloe Swarbrick's got more than 6 years' experience as an MP now. So ultimately, we'll see. We know that there are a lot of, yeah, young Māori are a young population, a lot of young people in the cities generally, and Chloe Swarbrick is really talking a lot about economic issues and about the tax system and fairness and things of that nature. And so that's likely to be fairly popular within that sort of more broader socially liberal green platform, are those economic issues, where what we saw from Labor this last election was a lot of criticism about them not wanting to put wealth tax and capital gains tax and things like that forward. So we'll potentially see the Green Party vote share grow at the moment, especially now while Labor's quite weak.
Well, they're interesting times, concerning times, but for a political commentator like yourself, or had an academic who studied in these areas, well, there's never a dull moment, I guess, Lara.
No, it's also quite tiring times, I have to say.
Tanaki,
good talking. A little bit personally taxing.
Get on you. Lovely to talk with you again, Lara. Thanks for sharing some time with us. Look forward to our next kōrero.
Kia ora. Thank you.
Associate Professor Lara Grease.